A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. Testing, testing. Hey, guys. Come on. Bring it in.
Clap your hands now.
Hi, I'm Gregory Porter. Welcome to The Hang.
Watch what happens when the people catch wind of the water hitting.
It's beautifully simple. In each episode, I sit down and talk with a close friend of mine. We shoot the breeze about music, life, cars, food, wine, whatever.
So anyway, our history. Yeah. So let's recount our history.
We may talk to some people at the beginning of their career. We may talk to living legends.
I got very kind of audacious when I was like 15 and started to call up cocktail lounges around Pittsburgh from the Yellow Pages. I said, hey, I understand you need a piano player. Some said, well, yeah, we got a piano. I don't know where you heard that from, but how old are you?
Who's joining me? This week, we've got my very good friend, Jeff Goldblum.
Do you know we're in this Capitol Records building?
Yeah.
Because of you.
What?
I am the reason why Jeff Goldblum got a recording contract.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take that snippet and run with it.
And so here is The Hang. Let's do it. Come on.
And where are you now? You're in Bakersfield.
Bakersfield, yeah.
So you drove down today for this?
I did, yeah.
How long is the drive?
2 hours, hour and a half. Yeah, 2 hours. It was a full 2 hours.
That's a long drive.
I had mentioned, what show was I on? Top Gear. You know this.
We have to talk about that. I was on Top Gear. Did you know I was on Top Gear?
I didn't know.
Well, I'll tell you
okay,
all about
we'll
it.
About
I want to hear
gear.
Your.
I was on Top Gear, and I mentioned that I wanted a Bentley Mulsanne, the long.
Really? I don't know. I don't know much about cars, man.
But I wanted to pick up my aunties to take them to lunch, yeah. You know. So Bentley gave me a Bentley, not the one that I wanted, but just yeah. something they had laying around.
Yeah.
So they drove it to my house yeah. this morning.
Yeah.
So I drove down in a nice blue Bentley. And,
wow. They yeah. drove you? They were driving?
No, I drove it.
Oh, you drove
it. Yeah, they could have it for a couple of days. I was like, okay, I'll do that.
Well, when did you do Top Gear, and are you going to use that car or the Bentley that you want on Top Gear? Or?
No, I wasn't in a Bentley on Top Gear. I did the racetrack. I was
me too.
Yeah,
and there's no Bentley. No, you just wanted a Bentley for yourself.
Right. They were talking what's your dream car, and I said give me a Bentley. But you know, people are like, yeah, I want it with the 22-inch wheels. I want blink. But I was like, I want to pick up my aunties. I want them to experience, you know, this feeling of wafting in a car and going yeah. to its beautiful lunch and then wafting back home, you yes. know.
So you did it? You did it?
No, I didn't do it yet. They just gave it to me.
Oh, but you're going to pick them up?
I'm going to pick up, yeah. I'm going to pick up.
When, today?
No. Totally. Oh. I got a couple of days. I'm going to wear out. They said, no, all the miles you want. I'm like, okay, all right.
That's so good. And then when... And that had something to do with you being on Top Gear.
Yeah, yeah. Matt LeBlanc was the host that was. You know, there's two. I don't.
Oh, you know, I'm just getting this idea because I did the one in England.
But that's the one I did.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened with you on Top Gear? Because I'll tell you what happened with me.
But this is the thing. This is they're tricky. They're clever. They're sweet, but they're tricky.
Yeah.
I do a few laps, yeah. and then they come, and then the guy just leans into my car, ding, 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 presses a few buttons on the car, and I'm like, okay. So I take a few more laps, mm-hmm. and I'm sliding all over the track. I'm like, what the hell? I kind of had the hang of this thing. So I pull back in, and the technician leans in again. He said, how's it feel? And presses a few more buttons. And I said, yeah, what did you just do? He said, I just took off the traction control.
Why would he do that?
So I would slide all over the track.
Because it would be more exciting?
It would be more exciting. It would be more, there would be more sideways skids. There would be more tire screeching.
I see.
As you go around the curves.
But did it sabotage your effectiveness in terms, because it's a race, you're competing against
all the... Oh, yeah, absolutely. It did?
Yeah.
I was a mess. I was all over the track.
Well, that doesn't seem at all fair.
No, it wasn't. But I think they wanted to get some, like, B-roll of me just, you know, really screwing up. Because I was kind of, I was handling myself pretty well.
I'll bet. Yeah. I'm not surprised. You're a driver. Have you ever raced before or done anything like that?
Not officially raced. I'll tell you what I did. This is a bit of craziness, and I didn't tell my wife that I did it yet. I was just in Germany.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And I had a day off, and in one of the car rental places, they rent premium cars, so they had a Mercedes S63 AMG. It's a fast, big, fat, big-ass engine, and it's fast.
Right.
And I said to myself, I'd always been driven on the Autobahn. I've always been driven really fast on the Autobahn. I want to do it myself. And not in my life, but still, I want to drive fast. You can't really do it legally here in the U.S., So, yeah, I got this thing, and I did. I went 200 miles an hour.
200. And you haven't told your wife yet?
I haven't told my wife.
She'll be upset.
I'm going to get my butt kicked. But
how did that feel, 200?
Very safe, very smooth.
Really?
The freeways over there are just too wonderful. You know, we do, America, we got to get our, you know. Donald Trump, can you please, you know, somebody start this infrastructure program, because the freeways are just flat and beautiful. And I mean, I would literally eat off those freeways.
No kidding.
But
really? Wow. Well, you and Top Gear, I'll tell you, just to finish that very quickly, just because I want to tell you, I don't know if anybody will be interested in this, but I'll tell you. So you did the Top Gear, and they sabotaged you.
Right.
Damn them. You're swerving all over the place.
Oh, man. Oh. There's a clip of me, and I'm sliding sideways and just like... And it just keeps going. I was like, when is this damn slide going to stop?
Oh, boy.
But I'm just totally out of control. No control of the car.
Well, I don't know about that. I'd never, you know, I like driving okay. I like riding a bicycle. That's when I really felt freedom for the first time.
Yeah.
But you know, I drive okay. I like to get from here to there. I don't really know cars, although I'm always after a fun car.
Yeah.
And what, you know, I'd be interested to see what you would production design me and art direct me, and if you thought I could get right now, I have, you know what I have? My wife has a Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
It's all electric, and I've just got this BMW iM3.
Uh-huh.
That's all electric. So
okay.
We never go to the gas station again.
That is amazing. Mine,
they're both black, and mine's a little thing. It's fine and dandy for me, but I wouldn't call them. Yeah, it's fine and dandy. But I was on that show some years ago, and I'd never raced like that. So I practiced a couple of times with that guy, the mysterious
guy
with
the Stig. Right,
yeah. And
it's insane, isn't it?
It was a great ride. You know, I was it was great. Yeah, you're unused to putting the gas all the way down to the floor and going around curves, and you really try to do it. And I did, but I said, hey, can you what is it? I think I wanted an automatic or something. They said, yeah, you can get that. Or, hey, well all we have, they said just before we did, we have a stick shift, but here it doesn't really go into fourth gear or fifth gear. So you just keep it in third. So I did that. And then I became a laughing stock of some kind. I didn't finish last, but I think I did okay. But anyway, they were like, huh?
That is funny. But what about this thing? This on that track, they tell you to go just go as fast as you can towards the wall,
right?
And then when you get like really close, then just slam on the brakes. I'm like, you have to defy the desire for living.
Yes, that's counterintuitive.
In order to go to go into a wall and just slam on the brakes, trust your brakes. I was like, I didn't check these brakes myself.
Right.
I don't trust nothing.
And they want a good show. I don't know. I don't think. No, even on a movie set. Look, when they have me do a stunt or something, I've done a couple of little minimally risky things.
Yeah.
And I know they want to get a good movie there.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes I've had to go fight the feeling early on that, hey, I'm in a movie. Nothing can happen.
Yeah.
But then you go on, you go, well, that's not exactly true. I better take care of myself.
Yeah.
So I look at the stunt guy and I say, here, look me in the eyes. Who's complete 100% responsible for this? I don't want any sad story. If I'm in the hospital later, well, I didn't really. The guy, I didn't know he was. Are you responsible? Then he has to look me in the eye and say, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'll say, okay, I'll give it a try. Well, geez. But then you got your dream car, this Bentley.
This Bentley. I mentioned on the show with Matt LeBlanc.
Yes,
you know, Top Gear.
He's a car guy, I guess. Yeah, he must like cars.
Okay. Serious car guy. Serious watch guy. You know, this the whole thing.
Watches too, and you watches too.
Yeah, I like watches.
We've
too.
Talked about that before too.
Yeah,
that's right.
You're beautifully classic over there.
Thank you. I've got this Cartier Tank watch, and what do you have today? Because you've got a little collection.
Yeah, just a little. This is a Rolex. You know.
Yeah.
I haven't been in this. I'm not in the high roller club, and haven't been here for too long. But you know, the records do well, and I can pick up nice little things. But listen, there's always some good, you know, altruistic, lovely thing that I do when I so I buy a house that has a big living room, not for me to kick back, but so I can get all my family in there.
Right.
And this big car is so that I could go pick up my aunties and they can feel the vibe of a quality ride and feel the leather. And I want them to have a chariot ride.
Yeah.
And I'd like my son, you know, I don't buy watches that'll fall apart now. I want him to have, you know, I want him to remember me. And it all comes back to the roots is, you know, I'm not, my daddy wasn't a Rolling Stone, but he didn't leave me physically. I have nothing of his, nothing. And I just want to leave something for him, you know.
It's amazing what you're saying. First of all, well, I've got two kids. You know, I've got the 3.5-year-old Charlie and two boys, and I've got River, who just turned 2. I think about that too. I just have a few watches, but I've thought about that. I thought, well, Charlie will get this one and that one, or they'll fight over it, but I've got like two for each of them.
Right.
And that's it.
Listen. So I wrote a song, Don't Lose Your Steam. And I realized afterwards, it's I'm saying something similar to my son. You know, these you know.
I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, I'm trying. It damn near is all about. You know, it's. I'm trying to funnel my emotions into this little guy. You know.
Yeah.
And
you have one.
I have one. Yeah.
Boy, what's his name?
Yeah, Demian.
Demian.
He's six years old.
Six.
Yeah. And he's a charmer, but you know, sitting on the top of the roof and the bridge is on mine. Steam engines roll by. If the bridges fall down, boy, don't you lose your head of dreams. You know,
beautiful.
Yeah,
that's so beautiful.
But this is the thing. I love it to write a song and put a lyric into the song. It's for everybody, but there's something there that's there personally for me.
Yeah.
So this is I haven't even told anybody. The first lyric, sitting on the top of the roof.
Yeah.
The bridge is all mine. Is
the bridge is all mine?
The bridge is all mine. Sitting on top of the roof is my ancestors. I used to have this idea when I was a kid that the people that die are watching over me, and they're sitting on top of my roof. Sitting on the top of the roof. The bridge is all mine. You know, so my ancestors are saying to me after they've gone, my mother, my father, my grandmother, they're saying to me, if the bridge falls down, if the road collapses, if things fall apart, don't lose your steam. Don't lose your head of dreams. Keep going no matter what.
Yeah.
So I'm saying to my son, I'm counting on you. Young man, I'm counting on you. Don't lose your head of dreams. Which is like Patches.
Yeah.
Which is like Patches. It's somebody from the past, the elder, is telling the young person, carry on the legacy, carry on, you know, wear my watch and think about me and remember how I taught you to be a good man, you know?
You're a wonderful father, I'm sure. You're a wonderful man. That's so moving to me. Hey, did you ever see, well, bridges, to, speaking of infrastructure, even if things kind of break down, keep going too. But how about, do you know, we're in this Capitol Records building right here where because of you, our band recorded our first album live. It was because we can tell the people that, but it was because of you, because we were on that Gregory Porter, not Gregory, but the Graham Norton show. And you had asked a couple of days if he's coming on, maybe he can play piano for Mona Lisa. And I'm gonna, anyway, Decca, Tom Lewis, and Rebecca Allen saw that. And that's why I got this deal to do the thing. So it's all because of you. So thank you again publicly.
So wait a minute, let's slow this down. Oh, yeah. I am the reason why Jeff Goldblum got a recorded contract.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take that snippet and run with it, but you know, it was we're going to talk about the origins of this music thing for you.
I'll tell you all about that.
We're at Capitol right now, y'all. Tell me about your origins in music.
So, here's what happened. I grew up in Pittsburgh, the home of Errol Garner, as you know, and Ahmad Jamal and many other people. My dad was a jazz fan, brought home. It had just come out. Errol Garner plays Misty.
Wow.
We played it on the big hi-fi set, and I remember getting enthralled with it. I was starting to take piano lessons. There were four of us kids. Our parents gave us lessons. My brother took clarinet. I took piano. And, you know, I had some facility for it, but I didn't know the joys of discipline, and I'd kind of dread the lesson because I hadn't practiced. But then he gave me, a couple years in, a piece of sheet music of, I think it was Alley Cat. But that syncopation, which I hadn't experienced before, I was like, oh, I'm going to just sit here and whatever it takes, I'm going to learn how to play this. I love it.
Yeah.
And I did. And then he gave me something like Deep Purple and Stairway to the Stars with some jazz, with some interesting chords and harmonies, which got in me. I'm really practicing. We're getting ready for the second album, and these arrangements that I'm coming up with and some new voicings that I'm doing gets in me to this day. It is like food. It is like nourishment. The sound of those harmonies is like edible, and it is real nourishment. So I had the seeds of that early on. So I sat and played, and then I got on to, there were some fake books around the house, and I figured out how to read a lead sheet, and somebody, I went to this guy that they found for me, my parents found for me when I was like 14, Frank Conamondo in Pittsburgh, who came out with a couple albums and was gigging around, a good jazz pianist, and he taught me about improvisation and what you could do. So that was the start of it. And then I got very kind of audacious when I was like 15 and started to call up cocktail lounges around Pittsburgh from the Yellow Pages and would kind of, I said, hey, I understand you need a piano player. I got that idea. And most of them would say, no, we don't even have a piano here. But some said, well, yeah, we got a piano. I don't know where you heard that from, but how old are you? Well, you want to come over and play it? I got a couple of jobs that way.
Wow.
My parents would drive me to the gigs, and then I met a couple of lady singers who would then drive me to a gig or two, and I'd accompany them. Anyway, that's how it started. But then I had my heart set on acting as a career. I went to New York when I was 17 and started to break in miraculously to, you know, film and TV. But I always kept a piano around with me. I snuck it in a couple of movies and plays, and then 30 years ago started to play out and about around L.A. And that's how this band started, you know. But my first professional job was two gents, this muse of this on Broadway at the St. James Theater that Galt McDermott, who'd done Hair, wrote the music for.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of rocky. And in the pit, we had Thad Jones, and we had for a while, and we had Bernard Purdy for a while. So I met these guys, and I was like, hey, I play piano too. So I was kind of playing with them downstairs, you know, in the basement for a while before the show, stuff like that. I've just always loved musicians and music, and now here we are playing. And thanks to you, like I say, we made a record, and we'll make another one.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to play Glastonbury soon. Now we're touring all over.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, when Decca has us going to these places. And we played Ronnie Scott's in London. And
awesome.
We went to Paris and Berlin. I know you're the hardest working person on the road. And you play hundreds of shows a year. But we've played here and there. And it's fun. It's really fun.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm just totally blown away that you know, Thad Jones was a pit musician for a Broadway show. I mean, that's wonderful. I mean, he was a, you know, professional musician, but just, you know, one of the geniuses of jazz. And, you know, Perdee on the drums.
Right. Played with Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
I met Aretha Franklin once. You ever meet Aretha?
I didn't meet her. Didn't have that blessing.
I got to meet her once. Yeah. Wow. I told her, I said, oh my, Miss Aretha Franklin, I just adore you. I just have loved you my whole life. And, you know, I got to tell her that at least. I met Stevie Wonder. How about that? Do you know Stevie Wonder?
I do know Stevie. This leads to a question. One of the questions that I thought about beforehand is the dream guest dinner party. You know, who are the three people alive?
Well, that's a good question. Dead. Well, you're one of them. Stevie Wonder, how about just thinking musicians? I mean, I could think of a lot of people, but just thinking in this area, so Stevie Wonder, certainly. How about Ray Charles?
Yeah.
Certainly. Somebody was saying, I'm just learning, one of my band members said, you know, Bud Powell is considered to be the best bebop, by some, the best bebop piano player ever. But, you know, Thelonious Monk, I've been infatuated with for a long time. I consume a lot of things. So, you know, lots of different musician types. And then, you know, then we can get into, I don't know, you know.
Right.
You know, Arthur Miller and, you know, other,
other
people like that. But, you know, how about you?
You know, this is the strange thing. I've been cooking for years.
And, cooking food.
And yeah.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this. That's right.
Yeah, I had a catering business for some time before the music thing was jumping off. That's what I was doing. And so sometimes, you know, when you meet somebody, you're like, oh, so I wonder, you know, you do things. You do crazy things. You're like, oh, I wonder what they're like naked. Or I wonder what they're like, you know, in certain situations. I think about what the person might want to eat if I was going to have them over for dinner. When you first meet somebody.
Yes.
I've done it with you. I was like, what would I make for Jeff? Something something unique, something light, fresh.
Yes.
Something almost damn near fresh, damn near right out of the ground.
Yeah.
But
that sounds good to me. I'd love to do that. Food is incredible, isn't it? And it's like music. I mean, you sing, like we were talking about nourishment and the deliciousness of music, but they're related, aren't they?
It's you know, it's a feeling of hot soup on a cold day. It's warming, it's nurturing, it's very motherly in a way.
Yeah.
That love, that gift, that warmth, that, you know.
Yeah, and giving that to people, and the way you sing is the same thing. You
I think about this. The things that I really love, it's a nurturing thing.
Yeah,
it's a leaving somebody with something that's gonna last with them, make them build them up, and make them feel better. I think about that. So food and music are very close for me. So the people I had on my list are people that I actually got to meet. And the funny thing is, it's been the same.
I'm so sorry. How did I not turn that down? That's really horrible. Okay.
I was like kind of pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it's like a noir stereo. Okay. Sorry, it's down now. I apologize.
It happened. So I got to meet Stevie Wonder. I was on his radio show, and we had a great conversation, and I thought that was going to be the end of this dream. I thought the dream was going to end after this hour, and then Stevie was like, "Hey, what are you doing tonight?" And I was like, "You say the word." He's like, "Let's have dinner."
Oh my God!
And I was like, "Done. I'm there." Oh my God. So I'm having dinner with Stevie, and he's so funny.
Where, at his house?
No, we go to this kind of Caribbean place.
Really?
And I did this thing where it's like, I had done it earlier in the day. What would I make for Stevie? In my mind, I had pictured I would do this, you know, this curry rubbed salmon. You know, it's one of my hit dishes that I make people love.
I love salmon.
And what did we have when we go to this restaurant? Stevie orders this.
He orders this
salmon with curry sweet potatoes on the side. And I was like, wow, how interesting.
You're very gifted.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
Very, you're very good. So,
and then my second person, here I am at the microphone.
Give me a clue. I like this. Give me a clue, and I'll come up with it.
Yeah, I already remembered. But Quincy Jones.
Oh, I love Quincy Jones. I've met him.
Yeah.
What a great guy he is. Did you see that documentary on him, by the way?
I did, yeah.
I love that documentary. Wonderful. Yeah.
So Quincy invites me over to his house. Yeah. It's like 12 o'clock at night.
Oh, man.
And what does he do and bring a plate of salmon out for us to enjoy at 12 o'clock. Quincy's, you know, he's eating with his fingers. I love it. He was so at home. He was like, you know, almost in a robe and eating salmon with his fingers and just in his, really, his house is so unique. It's a palace and it's filled with so much history.
Really?
And
well,
we go in that documentary. Yeah, we go to the room where his Grammys are, and he doesn't have room to contain them all. You know, the Bible says, you know, you'll receive so many blessings, you won't have room to contain them all. And that's what this room is. It's just so many great musical experiences that he's had. And so that was the second dream person. And I've had the dinner with him. I had the salmon. Well, I broke the bread with him. The other is impossible. I'll stuff an extra person on there. Nat King Cole or Martin Luther King. I'm sure we would have had some great meal, but the two live people I got to have dinner with, and it was a dream. Great conversation about just the history of music. And I said to them, just like any wonderful recipe or idea or feeling that is passed down that creates something else, they are inside of me. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The influences, the paint that has been put up on you is comes from somewhere. And so the music, the feeling, the energy of Stevie Wonder, the thought of thinking of something deeper, that the music meaning something more than just the lines and dots, comes from Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of putting all of your history, the jazz, the soul, the blues, the gospel, putting all of that into the music is Stevie Wonder. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I do.
And so the idea of speaking to them and letting them know that you are within me.
He must have adored you. He must have enjoyed his time with you. Yeah, he's so, like you, so deep and authentic and wise, you know, and his music. Oh, my God. Did you talk about your favorite songs of his? You know, when I was a kid, I wore out. I had a 45 of For Once in My Life.
Yeah.
That song, I played it over and over and again. His harmonica solo in that, the whole arrangement just knocked me out. I couldn't get enough of that. And then I listened to, when we were shooting this movie in Nashville, that we were talking about before, I was fulfilling this. His first finale had just come out, and I just listened to that over and over again. Boy, what song? I'm sure there are many of them, but do you know?
Yeah, well, I talked to him about his process. It's like he writes to chord progressions and a melody. Those, it starts first for him that way, and then he opens up, you know, in terms of the feeling, what it is that he wants to say. For me, it's the opposite. It's the melody, the lyric, the feeling comes out of my heart, my chest first, And then I apply the chords, the sounds that I want to hear around the idea. I build upon the theme.
And the lyrics and the idea of the song.
No, the lyric and melody come to me at the same time for some reason.
How many songs have you written now, and how often do you write?
Oh, well, most of my records are my own writing. Again, I keep maybe three songs idea of another writer or a standard. But I'm writing a lot. I write, and sometimes I put things away, and maybe it's not for now. Sometimes I'll get on a political ideas, and you know, sometimes it's too much. You know, maybe one of the songs is for one particular record. Maybe the other ones are for another time. Interesting thing is, a song I think I'm most proud of, it's on one of my records, is When Love Was King. When I wrote it, when I sat down to write the song, I was writing it for Nat King Cole. If I was going to write something for Nat King Cole, here it is.
Yeah.
It's an impossibility. He's passed away. He's gone.
Right.
But I come to find that the message, the lyric, is so for right now. He lifted up the underneath, and all of his wealth he did bequeath to those who toiled without a gain so they could remember his reign. He showed respect for every man, regardless of his skin or clan. Beside him stood his mighty queen, an equal force, wise and keen. You know, of hungry children first he'd think. You know,
so beautiful. That's the lyric that first came to you.
Yeah, this is the lyric, but it's all of the political things that we're talking about right now. It's immigration. It's the women's equality. It's race. It's the idea of a leader being just,
mm-hmm,
and thoughtful and righteous in his application of his power. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking of. And it's
that's so beautiful.
It's apropos to the time. Sure, in any time, really.
It sure is. Yes, it is. He, you know, and Nat King Cole, this is where he built this building.
Right.
You know,
the house that Nat built.
That's right. It was his success. And oh my gosh. Wait a minute. I just got, you were saying about a leader. Yeah. How about some of Stevie's politically tinged songs?
Yeah.
You Haven't Done Nothing.
I like, you know. But
this is
what's so hip about Stevie is you can have that message, but it's something you still want to groove to.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the power of, you know, I took that cue from a song I wrote in 1960, what? You know, people dance to that song, and they've danced to it, remixed it, danced to it all over the world. But there's still a message. The message is there. You know, Liquid Spirit is about being soulful and about real love. Unreroute the river, let the damned water be. There's some people down the way that's thirsty, so let the liquid spirit free. So that the message is there, but the groove is still there, which is the gift of jazz. That's what jazz has always done. You know, universal message, man.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys, you're listening to The Hang. Hit subscribe or follow on your podcast thingamajig of choice to get every episode of The Hang fresh off the presses.
We're at Capitol Records, and probably I'll record my record here, but there's a song on my next record called Thank You. Oh, and it's about, it's the audience. You know, the lyric is, thank you for making a place for me. Opening my eyes, now I can see. thank you, thank you, thank you.
Wow. Yeah, and you wrote that? You just wrote that?
Yeah, I wrote it a few months ago, but I'm telling the audience, thank you for, I didn't know that I had a place in the UK, in Germany, in Japan, in Portugal. I didn't know that there were, you know, thousands of people that wanted to come and see me. I didn't know that's who I was. They showed me an additional part of who I am. They said, and audiences can be a clarifier. They can help clarify who you are. They can tell you based on what they like. They're like, I see something in you. So, you know, sometimes I tried to, you know, give audiences like things that weren't authentically me.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, so the best things that we like about you are there will be no love this dying here. Oh. This authentic optimism that I have about love. That's who I am. They was like, Gregory, you don't have to make, you know, that's dope.
Yeah.
But but who you are is actually what we like. And it just confirms and affirms something that's already there. That's what I want to say to the audience. Thank you for opening my eyes so I could see me.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. So, of course, you had to be, we're all connected, of course, but you had to be ready to hear their teaching and ready to be, you know, the eighth degree black belt authentic artist that you are, you know. Yeah, and find yourself. And there's still always room to go and to grow until we're done, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. You're such a... A person that your senses are on your fingertips, and you feel deeply. And I've watched your performances, and I hear your performances, and the communication that happens with you and your band, and sometimes if there's a vocalist, it's an extraordinary thing. You're feeling it.
Yeah,
you're feeling it. Yeah. And isn't that dope? Isn't that dope?
Well, I love it. I never feel like I'm even performing. I feel like I'm sharing my passion, my love of and delight with this music and making it with whoever else I'm making it with. Yeah. And then, geez, listen to this. Isn't this so beautiful? You know, I don't know.
This is the thing. People think it's a performance that radiates from the stage. Yeah. But it's a... Music is its own thing that radiates in both directions, to the performer and to the audience.
Yeah. It's like, there it is. It exists. Let's just excavate this and enjoy this together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like we're standing around a campfire, both the performer and the audience.
That's right.
It's a wonderful thing. It's
so wonderful. We're lucky. Look what beautiful hands you have, too.
Yeah.
Look at that. You have gorgeous hands. And do you play an instrument?
For plucking out my melodies and the things I want to feel. I'm not a piano player.
But you have beautiful hands. Look how beautiful they are. Look at the fingernail. I'm a little bit of a connoisseur and a fetishist about, look at your long rectangular nail beds that are so glorious, you know. Well, it's true.
You know what's funny? I was in elementary school, and I had this girl that I liked, and I was like, wow, she'll never hold my hands. She loved that I had long nail beds.
Oh.
And she was like, you have the, I'm so jealous.
I can't believe
and
I
she
just
held
said
my hands.
Oh, yeah.
And so I made my hands available to her whenever, you know, we were just in sixth grade, but I made my hands available to her whenever she wanted. And I was like, you don't you want to hold my hand again and look at my hands?
Yes. Well, that's a big part of love making to me. I mean, whatever love making is, I find as thrilling as anything, the meeting of hands.
Yeah.
If I like them and am excited by them and their hands and their accepting and liking of my hands. And people, as you know, can touch hands in their 1,000 points of sensitivity in each part of the hand and fingertip.
Right.
And and to commingle and right. have intercourse manually like that can be infinitely mysterious and satisfying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You might have sparked something. I need to write something about hands. Oh, I mean, yeah. we already sang a song about grandma's hands,
oh,
but you know.
I love that song you do. Oh, yeah, but, grandma's hands.
But this is an interesting thing. I'm actually glad that I don't play an instrument in my performances because I sing with my hands. I'm stating the case with my hands. I need them.
I wish I had,
you know, two more arms I can express myself, you know, but I need to speak with my hands and open. When I say something about love, my hands automatically go like this.
Yeah.
I open it wider.
Yeah.
And I want to welcome people in.
Yeah. You're an artistic musical shaman. You're a transcendental pioneer and, you know, guide. That's right. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. You know, yes, and contact with you and what you're doing can enlighten one. Oh, I've experienced it myself.
Man, you are hired for the next. If I do anything again at the Hollywood Bowl, you definitely got to introduce me to the audience.
Anytime, it'll be my pleasure. So anyway, our history. Yeah. So let's recount our history together. The first time, I don't know how you remember it, but I'm in the airport. I don't know where we were going. I don't know which airport or where I was going.
L.A.
Was it L.A.?
LAX, yeah.
I was going somewhere, coming from somewhere, and there was a big, wide, you know, walkway there
right.
as I was, you know, purposefully going to some flight. And there you came. It wasn't in a crowd. We were almost in a sparsely populated crowd. And there you came. And I knew who you were from many yards away because I'd loved your music.
Mm-hmm.
And I marched up to you. And I don't know what I did, but I said, oh, my gosh, I adore you and your music. And anyway, we exchanged a couple of words like that. And you were very nice and
right.
sweet. Yeah.
Well, yes. So I'm walking on my way to Europe. Somewhere, and you know, I wasn't 30,000 feet up in the air yet, but you came, and you got about 6 inches away from my face.
No, I'm sorry.
Your breath was pleasing.
Uh oh.
And you smell like some beautiful cologne, You express the charm that you have, and you were like you looked off to the side, and you were like, Gregory, the No Love Dying, the Be Good, and you listed the songs that you liked, and you spoke of me in a warm way, and I was like, in my head, I was like. I apologize if this is corny.
No.
This is Jeff.
Oh,
this is the fly. This is the man.
Well.
And at that moment, I said to myself again, because it happens, you know, again, I say, you have no idea where the music goes and who it touches.
Right,
it's such a beautiful thing when it happens to touch the people who are your idols as well.
Oh.
And they come back to you. With admiration and love, and so, you know, at that moment I hadn't left the ground in the plane, but I was already 30,000 feet in the air just from that little interaction we had. It was so cool for me.
It was cool for me. Well, I adore you, and then
we did the Graham Norton show together, and you played so beautifully on. Nature Boy.
Mona Lisa.
I did Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
That was we did Mona Lisa. And I remember you threw a little monk.
That's right.
Vibe in the middle.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, music and the way people express it should be a part of their personality.
Yeah.
And you play like your personality.
Oh.
Strong and with a point of view and unique. That's what I love
well,
about
Well, I'm a humble
about,
student of it, and coming from you, that's very encouraging. Thank you.
I love when musicianship is that way.
Yeah.
When, like, my piano player speaks
in
a gruff way.
Yeah.
He can make the piano rumble in the way that he speaks. Hey, Gregory. Hey, Gregory. He can play that. He can play that.
Yeah.
And just expressions of your personality comes out in your music, and I love that. That happened on Graham Norton. Yeah. We had a great time hanging. It was like a guy's hang. I mean, there's alcoholic drinks and funny talk. But our last time was at a pub in London.
Yeah, well, we had just done that thing for Universal. I got a chance to the honor of sitting in with you guys as you were performing that night for one song, and we did I Fall in Love Too Easily, which I love, and I couldn't believe how you sang it. And playing along was just totally thrilling.
We had a wonderful performance in front of a select audience in London.
We went to a pub.
But this is an interesting thing about that night. Yeah. But before we went to the pub, later that night we went and had beers at a pub. Yeah. But before that, so we'd done our performance, and we come off stage. And, you know, I have, you know, quite... you know, lovely following and appreciation in the UK, and so I come off the stage and I'm the man. I'm getting all this love. You know, people are coming up to me, and then so, you know, I sometimes in a crowd I like to hide. So then Jeff Goldblum comes out from behind the stage, and then people start to attack you in a way, not attack, but gather around you. Yeah. And they totally leave me, and I'm able to then get a drink at the bar. Then I'm able to get a little sandwich that they had.
Wow.
I was like, you have no idea, but you took attention in the most beautiful way. I was like, oh, now I can relax a little bit.
Wow.
But you were so sweet to everybody and generous with photographs. And I noticed that. There's a humility in you that is unexpected for a man of your stature who's been in the industry for so long. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to see.
Thank you. And you as well, I mean, geez,
oh man, hush know. Up with that kind of talk. But
that's true.
But then we went and had a great. Yeah. I'm gonna make fun of you right now.
Okay.
We went to the pub.
Yeah.
And. You know, this is like a guys pub. You know, it's slightly dark. It's a little bit dingy. They have about 50 different ales and beers that you can have. This is serious.
That's right.
Beer drinking pub in London.
That's right.
Jeff gets this big frosty beer, and we're about to guzzle our beers down, and Jeff takes the sweetest, most delicate sip off the foam at the top. And that's about all he drinks of this beer.
Yeah.
We knew. Yeah. We were like, yeah, okay, you're not a beer drinker. But we had the greatest fun and greatest conversation there that night. And a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fabulous hanging out with you. Hey, you ever see that movie, Round Midnight?
Yeah.
Dexter Gordon. And you know how jazz people and musicians are, you know, were treated during a certain period and maybe now differently in Europe.
Yeah,
you know, you must have a whole experience with that.
You know,
I love that movie.
Herbie Hancock.
Yeah,
Herbie Hancock is in the movie. Yeah. It's amazing to see.
Yeah,
but it is still that way. You know, I'm always saying, thank God for Germany. Thank God for France.
Really?
Thank God for the UK.
Really?
The music is rich and is cultivated here, and it's popular. Don't let me sound greedy and ungrateful.
Yeah.
But you know, there's something about the tradition of loving and bringing and appreciating the music that happens in Europe. It's still an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, yeah.
African American musicians went there because the racial barriers didn't exist for them in such a strong way. When they went, and they can play their music and be appreciated fully.
Yeah,
I think back to the story of Nat King Cole, this giant, this master, this genius, being attacked on stage because he was performing for an integrated audience. It to this day, I feel, you know, that he's owed an apology.
Oh.
First of all, to be in the place of his worship. It's essentially a sacred place.
Yeah.
Sitting at the piano bench, and they broke the piano bench, and
they did.
Oh, and they they abused him.
They
kicked and punched and kicked him.
No. There's an apology is owed more than an apology.
A lot of the musicians were running away from that,
right.
and to a different type of respect and treatment.
Yeah.
But this music is to be done in all places for all people. You should even take it to the hotbeds of a disrespect and unkindness and unleash it.
Right.
Unleash this love.
Right.
So I feel like that's what I'm doing sometimes in some of the places that I sing.
I can imagine. And
it's a gift. It really is.
Well, you're a gift to the world, truly. I don't mean to be corny, but that's what you're doing is important and powerful and you know, how we can move the needle. You know, I mean, it's not certainly not just from politics.
Yeah.
Person like you, yes, can move the needle for the whole species and internationally. Yeah.
Why are people scared of jazz?
Well, I'm sure you know better than I, because you know your lifelong devotion to it. That's your life and every place you've taken it. My little experience with it, yeah, I've run into people here and there who say, and they're not ashamed to say it on some talk shows. Oh, you know, Jeff's going to play some jazz, but I don't like jazz. What don't they like? Well, there's all kind of, as we know, all sorts of different kinds of jazz.
Right.
Maybe
right.
Some people have had an experience that is, academic and esoteric and not so accessible. And, there's that
right.
form of it. Other people may have other, it's case by case basis.
Right.
But
right.
What do you think?
Well, yes, it's all of those things. There's also the way things are presented. If it's not presented in the most beautiful or comfortable or this use this word accessible ways, then it can be difficult for the listener. Now that is both the musician, and it's also the venue. It's also everybody's involved. I think this is it's a deeper music that. You think about the sub genres within the genre. You go from Duke Ellington to Sun Ra. You go from Frank Sinatra to Leon Thomas. I mean, there's the range that exists in the umbrella of jazz.
Yeah.
So when I tell people that say, I don't like jazz, or I don't think I like jazz, it's like you haven't found, the proper prescription for you.
Right.
Because trust me, it exists.
It's so wide.
It's so wide and so
human and humane and giving and nourishing. It reminds me of like when my kids, Charlie, who's talking more than the 2-year-old now, but he says, he says some article of some item of food, like, I don't like Brussels sprouts or fish or something like that. I go, wait a minute, maybe so, but you haven't tasted all the ways that you can have fish or vegetable. Don't jump to conclusions. You're 3 and a half, and there's a million ways to eat it.
Right.
Same thing with jazz, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. And it's a rainbow. So there you go.
It certainly is. He talks about rainbow. He loves every color. And your music, of course, is who could be afraid of? Nobody's afraid of your music. You serve it up so beautifully, but it still has such integrity.
Yeah,
and it's so deeply, organically nourishing. I'm thinking of that song that I've always loved. Work song that
you do
the best version of I've ever heard.
Boy. I go there in my head. I go there in my head. The work gang.
Yeah, well, you're an actor. You're a great actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you put on the cloak of the song.
Yeah.
And you climb into the song. And you become the character in which you speak.
Yeah.
And you don't separate yourself, you know, from that. I am breaking up big rocks.
Well, it's great. It's great acting. You're a wonderful actor. Yeah. I don't know that I could do that song. But there you go. Well,
very cool, man.
Well, I adore you.
Jeff Goldblum, thank you so much.
I can't
for coming
enough.
And hanging. Thank you for agreeing to sit here and be interrogated by...
I didn't feel, it feels like a wonderful... I could do this forever. And doing this, you're so gifted at this, like cooking and like music. I'll be listening to every podcast you have. Any talking you do, I'll be listening in.
Don't forget, you can listen to The Hang on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or the podcast thingamajig of your choice, and get every episode of The Hang fresh off the presses.
Clap your hands now.
This is Gregory Porter. Come on, bring it in.
This has been a Cup and Nuzzle production. Cup and Nuzzle. Okay.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.